to the Bumblecast. I'm your host, Ian Flynn, the Bumble King, and joining me as always is the Mad Titan of Podcasts, Kyle JCRB Krause.
Yes, I truly do hold the Infinity Gauntlet for podcasting. I will be getting the podcasting stone shortly.
And I will already have the Bumble Raffle Stone, the Deadline Stone, Mixing Stone.
I will control all podcasts. I can make half of them disappear with a snap of my fingers, by the way. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert for a 30-year-old comic series. Oh, and a new movie, I guess, but...
So how you been, sir?
I'm doing okay. Kind of hanging in there. Not a whole lot going on with me. You sound like you're doing real well over there.
So we're doing this episode on Infinity War, right?
Yes. Uh-huh.
I've been hyped for this movie for a long time. Not just because it's the culmination of this Marvel Cinematic Universe, but with the directors involved, the basic storyline, everything about it I've been hyped for. I bought us fancy theater seats well in advance, the kind where they bring you the refreshments. This was my treat to me. This was going to be the big deal.
Oh, yeah.
And Wednesday I woke up with my throat on fire. And it's like, no. Even if I have to be wheeled in on a gurney, I'm seeing this stinking movie. So we went, and I saw it opening day, and I have been paying for it ever since.
Oh.
I mean, when you've got whatever I've got as bad as I do, and you need an inhaler for it, it's... But, nope, I saw the movie, we got our topic for the Bumblecast, I'm here, we're doing this thing.
We're going to talk some Infinity War, and we are going to go deep into spoilers, so if you haven't seen the movie, you probably should turn back now, or at least soon, you know.
We'll talk a little bit that's non-spoilery, and then we'll give you the big heads up that we're going to go
deep into
enemy territory.
We'll start light first, but I mean, it's hard not to even just discuss this movie and not spoil it, because... The fact is that, I mean, it's pretty much unwatchable if you have never seen any previous Marvel Comics movie.
But first off, we need to do a little celebration of our own and give a prize away with the Bumble Raffle.
That's right. The Bumble Raffle is where you can win a prize. We select and you win. You can email us at bumblecast@yahoo.com to enter, or just be a patron and you're automatically entered to win. So, Ian, this week's Bumble Raffle winner is...
Brando.
Brando?
Brando.
Marlon Brando?
Possibly. I don't know.
Oh, cool. Well, congratulations, Marlon Brando. You won the Bumble Raffle.
All right, so our non-spoilery 30-second take on it is I liked it. It was everything I wanted it to be.
I agree with that 100%. It was everything I expected, and I was pleased and found it very satisfying. There was a lot going on.
Oh, yeah, and I think that... Now, obviously, I'll have to go through it and watch it again. But given the amount of characters and the number of plot threads going on, I think it did a very good job of keeping it easy to follow.
Oh, yeah.
Like you said, if you have not watched any other movie, that this is probably too dense to get a lot of the nuance. But at the same time... There's been, 18 previous films?
Sure. You don't have to watch all 18 of them.
No, though. But at this point, if you haven't jumped on the bandwagon, this movie isn't for you. This is for the folks who have dedicated themselves to the story.
Yeah.
I'm sure you'll get something out of it if you have avoided them and this is your first time in. But if you're listening to this show, I think you've been watching them.
Yeah, yeah.
The big thing for me with this movie was how they would characterize and portray Thanos. And he is dead on to what I was hoping for. He has motivation. He is a rounded character. He's the eloquent monster, which is an archetype I absolutely adore. And they do an excellent job in the film of balancing his power level so that he comes across as a truly terrifying and powerful being without being a boring wall that everyone bounces off of.
Right.
Like, if you've seen X-Men Apocalypse, and when the X-Men finally team up to fight Apocalypse himself, that was one of the most disappointing and boring final conflicts you can have in a movie because he's just standing there while they shoot things at him.
Yeah, that was a very disappointing movie.
Compare that to, let's say, the battle with Thanos towards the third act of the film, where it was extremely intense and everyone had an active role in the battle.
Yeah, that's, I would agree with that. I was really surprised at how much the movie focused on Thanos and how he kind of makes up for the Marvel cinematic movies being nothing but really kind of boring and bland villains for the most part. It's like, oh, so that's where all your villains have been. That's where all your villain writing powers have been stored, in Thanos.
And structurally, it's a brilliant approach because, you know, you have so many strong central characters from the past 10 years of movies.
Right.
How do you pick one? And you don't. You go with Thanos because it is his story when you get down to it. It's his quest. It's his character arc. Everything is based off of what he wants to accomplish. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense to be the Thanos movie. You could have just called it Thanos instead of Avengers.
Yeah.
What else can be said without just going crazy deep? I will also say, last thing, on my end at least, is I'm glad that they took risks with this one. Because the Infinity War comic does not hold anything back. Nothing is sacred in it. And with so many big name actors and so much general interest in the franchise, I was a little afraid they might play it a bit safe, but they didn't. They, from the very beginning, they make it clear, this is where things are going. You're along for the ride. Buckle up.
Yeah. With so much focus on Thanos, I was wondering how things were going to shake out in terms of his success or not.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wasn't sure how this was going to go. And with all of the mentions previously that Avengers 3, this one, Infinity War, is no longer a two-parter. With all of that coming up before the movie was released, I was kind of wondering, were they going to wrap everything up in this movie? Or are we going to be seeing it wrap up in the next one? And I won't spoil that for you if you haven't seen it, but yeah, you should probably go see it. If you're invested in this universe, if you're invested in any of the characters, you definitely want to go see it.
It's one of those where it feels like the spectacle of the film format, the theater format,
yeah,
is worth seeing it.
Uh-huh. That I would agree with.
So, it's good. Go see it. That's our non-spoilery take. This is your last chance to get out before we get into the spoilers themselves.
Yeah.
Last chance.
Here we go. Here we go. We're doing it. We're doing
Final
it.
call.
We're doing it. You better get out of
All
here. If you
right.
click on that Q&A link if you don't want to be spoiled for this movie. Okay, have you done it? Okay, good. I think they're all gone, Ian.
So, did you go into it with a Deadpool? Like, who you thought was going to die?
No, did you?
I did.
Oh.
I did. I was confident.
I expected Cap to die, I think was like the only one I was like, oh, maybe Cap. Oh, and obviously Vision. Vision seemed like an obvious.
Yeah, they kind of telegraphed him in the commercials, but
Yeah, well,
I figured.
I kind of avoided most of the previews for this, surprisingly.
Oh, good for you. I figured Cap was out. I figured Tony was out.
Yeah.
And I figured Loki would make a noble sacrifice towards the end of the film.
You think Loki would be noble?
And they've built towards it.
I know.
You know, he's not a 100% bad guy.
True.
But no, they took him out right quick.
Yeah, that was surprising. I think they wanted to show, because like, what I'm thinking what they wanted to show was like, okay, here's the biggest, baddest, most popular villain of this universe. And here's Thanos coming along to just crush him like a freaking bug. Just, yeah, just be like, yeah, no. Here's the biggest, baddest villain you guys know of. Oh, he's nothing compared to this guy.
I mean, you could get the same effect with the way that he beat the ever-loving crap out of Hulk, but it doesn't
True.
feel the same.
Right.
And then when he does the finger snap and people start evaporating, it's like Bucky's gone. Well, okay, that makes sense. That's a knife in the heart to Cap, and
Yeah.
Wanda's gone. Well, that makes sense. Now there's no way to use her in the next film to fight the Infinity Stones. And there goes Sam. Well, that kind of sucks, but at least we got War Machine still around. And what do you mean you killed T'Challa? No. You get back here. You undo that right now. Like, if anyone was to go from Black Panther, I figured it was going to be M'Baku because he was really cool. He stood out from the crowd out of a whole bunch of really cool supporting characters, but he wasn't like a headliner. So he could be safely removed. It would still suck, but we would still be able to have T'Challa. But no.
They pretty much evaporated everybody who wasn't part of the core original Avengers team, except for Rocket. And
Yep.
well, and all of the Guardians of the Galaxy except for Rocket. So it's the Avengers and Rocketed. The event the Avenger the Avengers of the Avengers and Rocket Raccoon. That's the fourth movie.
Now, the only thing I'm pinning my expectations on here is when Strange and Tony and Peter are all en route to Titan, Strange makes a point of saying how, in the end, he will protect the time stone above Tony and Peter. No questions, no hesitation. The stone comes first. Then he does his freaky head bobble and sees out of a bajillion possibilities, only one way for them to win. And then when Tony gets speared, he gives up the time stone to protect him, flying directly in the face of what was so heavily established before. And there was no bonding moment. There was no turnaround where they became bros. It flies in the face very clearly of what he said. And on his way out, as he turned into leaf litter, he said it was the only way. In the original comic, now granted, it's been a long time since I read it, but I seem to remember that the Avengers' involvement was more or less a stalling tactic so that the higher powers could formulate their plan. They were disposable fodder. So I'm wondering if that theme is going to continue into four, and the fact that Thanos was allowed his finger snap was to let things fall into place so that they can get the gauntlet back and hit the cosmic reset button or something. Because it feels too constructed to not to be an oversight.
Right. Now, I have not read the Infinity Gauntlet, but I did do some research, and Nebula plays a very big part in the Infinity Gauntlet. And I'm wondering if she's going to end up playing a very similar role in Avengers 4.
Quite possibly, considering that she and Tony are the last ones left on Titan.
Yeah. So, 'cause she's still alive. And she obviously is out for vengeance on Thanos. And Thanos has already accomplished his goal. He's kind of done at this point. I think he feels like he's kind of done.
Oh, sure.
So if someone were to come after him, he may not be expecting that. He may not be ready for that. And then we'll end up with someone else in the villain seat for Avengers 4. And Thanos may realize the error of his ways and blah blah blah, et cetera, et cetera. Probably not, because he's Thanos and that's kind of how these things go, but the gauntlet still exists. It still has its power in it, so it's not like that's off the table.
Right.
So I'm thinking the Infinity Gauntlet comic may kind of telegraph where we're going next in a way. I don't know how much they're gonna adapt that for sure, but they actually seem to kind of adapt some of the earlier Thanos comics too with this one. With his quest to get the Infinity Stones. So, I don't know. It's interesting to kind of look at Infinity Gauntlet and compare and see where the story may or may not go. I'm kind of hoping they throw a curveball in there, but because they're usually pretty good about that. They don't just do exactly what's, they don't just recreate the comics on screen. That'd be kind of boring, which is good. But I'm kind of wondering if that's something that may play into Avengers 4.
Another thing is that Adam Warlock was a major player in the end game for the comics, and he was teased at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. So I'm wondering if they'll bring him in from that, or if they're going to save that for Guardians 3 down the line. I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting because when I was looking at that, when I was also looking into Infinity Gauntlet, I noticed Adam Warlock and I'm like, wait, Adam Warlock was at the end of Guardians 2, so maybe he'll come into play here, but I don't know. They did kind of sign. I noticed that they seem to have like a power creep issue where they're writing off the most pe they're write out the most pet they sideline the most powerful characters pretty handily. Like Wanda is are easily the most powerful Avenger. Like the way she stopped the attack on Wakanda the way she did was like, yeah, you basically just kind of like sidelined her specifically because if she were actually in play, she would just kind of decimate them easily, right? Same with Vision. So
Now,
I'm kind of I don't know how to feel about that. What do you think?
I feel like it felt a little more natural than Civil War.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I love Civil War to death. It's one of my favorite films, but one of my favorite Marvel films, I should specify. But at the airport fight, which I thought was overall really solid, it does beg the question, where is Vision for most of this?
Yeah, he doesn't
Unless
appear.
he was purposefully hanging back, but that doesn't make a ton of sense. At least with the Wakanda invasion, you have Hulk is sitting it out because Thanos put the fear of Thanos into him.
Apparently.
Vision is getting his brain downloaded, and Wanda is supposedly on site to be able to nuke the Mind Stone the second he's free.
Right.
You don't have to worry about her being in the middle of a fight and come back and do the thing. It made enough sense.
Oh, sure. But
But yeah.
it's still just like, oh, sure, let's sideline our most powerful characters that could take care of this.
It was nice that she got a chance to come into her own, though, because we didn't really see her do a whole lot in Avengers 2 or Civil War. So letting her kind of go all crazy, go nuts this time around. Everybody got to go crazy go nuts. Let's not kid ourselves.
I do love the dynamic of Rocket and Bucky. For the even if it was only for a few seconds, I really just want to see, I want to see them together. That's pretty good. Rocket really works well with almost anybody. He works good with Thor.
Yeah,
he's great. So I'm glad they kind of kept him because he's gonna be a good part. He's gonna add some levity to the fourth movie, which I think we really need.
Yeah. Another thing I was worried about going in was when they started showing off the children of Thanos as, you know, nameless acolytes. I know they have names, but let's be honest here. Nobody cares about that.
Yeah, I don't even remember them being named. I don't think they were.
I was concerned that, you know, with a movie this big, you're adding more characters. But they weren't really characters so much as they were the minions to be killed.
Yeah.
And for that, I thought they served their purpose well. They had enough characterization to not just be grunting CG. Their fights were interesting enough that they were able to break up the monotony of the big fight scene. They all went out in interesting and unique ways, but they didn't steal any screen time. They were there to be a threat and removed, and that's perfectly a good function.
Yeah. No, they were perfectly fine. I was rather surprised to see Peter Dinklage show up.
Yeah. And I feel... I don't know how to feel about his appearance, because Peter Dinklage is a phenomenal actor.
Yeah.
Yes, casting him as a dwarf that's 8 feet tall feels like a joke at his expense, but maybe it's not. I don't know.
Maybe? I don't know either. Maybe he wanted that.
I mean, I would imagine that he would not have taken the role if he thought it was insulting, but... I'm not sure how that falls in the terms of political correctness.
Well, he made a lot of money, so I think he's okay. I'm sure he's not too beat up about it. But I did enjoy his appearance. I didn't realize he was giant at first, though. It took me a second to realize, oh, okay. We have giant Peter Dinklage going on here. That's cool.
And now we got Stormbreaker in the mix. Does that mean we get Betty Ray Bill in the future?
There was some reference to Betty Ray Bill earlier too that I don't know.
Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, did he appear in there?
There's a big shot of the gladiatorial
tower,
and his species is one of the facades.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, I remember.
And I think they name drop his species too in that movie. So,
okay, so Beta Ray Bill could exist.
Yeah,
theoretically.
I mean, at this point, I don't think they need to worry about being too weird for the audience to have a skeletal horseman flying around.
I'm okay with that. I like Beta Ray Bill. He's fun.
Oh, he's just manly.
He is. He truly is.
Gotta say, I was morbidly entertained by the happy ending. And by that I mean you have Thanos.
It's Thanos' happy ending.
Yeah, he goes to this idyllic world and he has this quiet moment and this smile of, you know, I did it. Good for me. I'm done. And it's like, yeah, you won, buddy. You did it.
The sun, the sun rises on a thankful universe. It's like, oh boy. I'm afraid to say they're not very thankful. And they're coming for your ass, buddy.
But I just adored Thanos's characterization, his motivation, his portrayal, everything was spot on.
Yeah, I was really surprised at how kind of, I guess, empathetic he was. Like how I could kind of understand his motivations in a way. It's a very, very twisted motivation, but it also has it makes some level of sense
Well, that's what make.
from his perspective, and that's what
Well,
makes him,
yeah.
yeah, and that's what makes him a good villain.
I think that's what made him and Killmonger stand out among the Marvel villains is that they, you can at least understand what they're going for. You don't agree with it. They're still monsters.
Yeah.
But there's more to it than what so many of the others have had. I mean, Red Skull was a Nazi. That's all there is to it. He's bad,
Yeah.
which is fine for the, kind of schlocky first intro to the whole thing. Sure, fine. That's cool. Loki found his own voice over time, mostly because Hiddleston is so freaking amazing as an actor, but his motivations of the first film were not very clear.
Yeah.
And he stole so much of the limelight in the second film that does anybody even remember there was a villain in Thor 2?
That's the thing about Loki is that he doesn't have a clear motivation. He never does. He always seems, I guess his motivation is to serve himself. That's kind of
Yeah.
it.
Well, he's
Like,
the god of chaos, so
yeah,
he can be a
exactly.
little chaotic.
But that's his only motivation, really, is to just serve himself. He doesn't really seem to, anything beyond that doesn't seem to be within his purview. So, I don't know.
I mean, Ultron had an interesting take on things if you could figure out what it was. It was such a muddled presentation.
Yeah.
He had a slight bit of sympathy for Hela with the whole, she did her job and was punished for it, but she wasn't really exceptionally memorable. I mean, she was fun, but she didn't
Yeah.
really stand out. And then you have Killmonger step on the stage is like, oh, okay, now you have my attention.
Yeah.
You are worth taking note of.
Yes, and Zemo was forgettable.
Yeah, Zemo was fun.
Yeah, but he was kind of meh. But either way, I know that the next two movies before we get to Avengers 4 don't take place after this one.
Nope.
No, they do not. And I'm curious to see how they're going to tie in. I think Captain Marvel's the pretty obvious one, at least
Right.
just introducing her.
Right. Captain Marvel's is going to be, from what I've read, a straight up origin story movie like so many others, and it's set well before the events of the other movies. Like, I think.
It's set in the 90s.
Yeah, okay.
And
So after.
it has a younger Nick Fury, and Coulson comes back to the movies for that one,
So.
which pleases me greatly as a agent as an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. fan. I am glad to see Coulson return to the movies.
So we'll have that all set up so she can do her thing in Avengers 4.
Yes.
We'll get our Guardians 3. We'll get our Black Panther 2 and Spider-Man 2.
We also have Ant-Man and the Wasp coming later this summer, and that supposedly does have some level of connectedness to Infinity War. It takes place immediately after Civil War, but supposedly there's something revealed that will play into Avengers 4.
I'm putting money on it being the after credits scene. Like, the movie will do
Possibly.
its thing, and then we'll either get something funny like, oh, la-di-da, life is good. What's that alien spaceship? Ba-da-bum-bum.
Maybe.
Or one of them turns into mulch like everybody else, and Hawkeye shows up and says, okay, we got work to do to be continued in Avengers 4.
Yeah. Something about the quantum universe might play into it as well. Maybe that is an entrance into the Soul Stones world or whatever. Who knows?
Also,
I'm kind of wondering where everybody is who disappeared. Are they
they're dead.
really gone, or are they just in some sort of weird limbo universe, like with it,
Nah,
like
I
stored
hope so.
within the Soul Stone or something crazy like that? I don't know.
Now, I hope they are like straight up dead, and they have to pull some crazy, like double snapsies on the Infinity Gauntlet to just undo it all.
Oh yeah. I
If
think
they're just
that's
shuffled off to somewhere else.
I'm sure that's where it's going to, as in using the Infinity Gauntlet to reverse things. I mean, obviously we know due to the way the movie business works, we know that the impact is a bit lessened on these characters' quote unquote deaths because we know at least most of them are going to be back in some way, shape, or form because we know they have movies in the works. So,
Unless that whole stinger at the end of Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is that the original Guardians are going to be the stars, the third
that could be interesting.
Everyone wanted Shuri to put on the costume by the end of Black Panther. She's still alive.
She's still there. She could very well be Black Panther in T'Challa's stead while he's gone. In the next movie. That would be pretty cool. I'm kind of down. We're gonna have Captain Marvel. I'm pretty excited for Captain Marvel. I don't know what the movie's gonna be about. I don't know what's gonna happen, but I'm looking forward to that one. And I am also looking forward to the Wasps movie, who has her sidekick Ant-Man along for the ride for some reason. So it's a good time to be a Marvel fan. I think it's going to be a slow burn to get to wait for another year for Avengers 4, but I think in the end it'll be worth it. And the payoff will be worth it, I hope. Just based on the setup of this movie, because man, this movie hits you hard.
It does. It really does.
Yeah.
Also, I'm totally vindicated. Because in Captain America, when Red Skull grabs the Elia cube, whatever you want to call it, and gets zapped, I was like, he totally didn't die. That thing zapped him somewhere else.
Yep.
Prove me wrong, Marvel. And now they became the weird, spooky dude.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I was really surprised to see Red Skull. I was like, huh, that's where he's been. He's been out hailing Hydra on some other planet in the middle of nowhere. Cool.
And they don't need to do anything more with him after that. I'm
No.
vindicated. I'm settled. Thank you, Russo brothers. I am done.
No,
I am sated.
yeah, no, I don't think we need any more Red Skull. He's fine. He's fine where he is.
But yeah, just the whole thing hit all the notes I wanted. They addressed everything I wanted. They at least put some window dressing on stuff like, okay, where is Ant-Man and Hawkeye? Well, they're under house arrest because of the last film. Cool. Roll with it. The fact that Vision calls out Captain America saying, look, you crashed the plane. You sacrificed yourself. Why can't I sacrifice myself? Well, because I didn't have a choice. We have a choice for you. It just, everything fit together very nicely.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. Is it, I don't know if, I wouldn't say it's necessarily better than any of the solo character focus movies, but as the culmination of this universe and in terms of the story that's been told over the last decade, I think it works very well.
Yeah, it's certainly better than Avengers 2.
That might be amongst the worst of the MCU. It's still it, and here's the thing, even the worst of the MCU still not all that horrible. So,
Yeah.
it's fine. It's just not a great movie.
I mean, it has its moments, but.
Yeah.
And it's really funny, just queuing up Avengers 1 in my mind and putting it next to Avengers 3. The idea of so many. You've got like five characters coming together in this crossover film. That's huge. How are they going to manage that many characters?
Oh, that was nothing. That was
And the sense of hope and unity of these various peoples coming together for the greater good, and they save the day. Huzzah!
yep.
And then we've got Infinity War, which is you lose. Good day, sir.
It's Oh, man. I'm glad the Russo brothers kind of are the architects of this universe now.
Yeah.
They have done amazing things with pretty much everything they've worked on.
Yeah, one of the things I'm going to have to do on the next viewing is I've watched Civil War enough times now. It's kind of like the go-to easy watch film.
Sure.
I want to waste some time. What? I'll pop in Civil War. I can just breeze through that. After seeing it enough times, you can really see where the time discrepancies start to kick in, especially towards the latter half.
There are a lot of timeline issues
with the
MCU overall.
Well, yeah. But in that film in particular. So I'm wondering if seeing Infinity War through experienced eyes, not just experiencing it, but you know, seeing it and going, okay, I know what's happening now, what's going to happen. If things won't line up as well as I thought they did, but just like Civil War, I don't care because it's so entertaining and exactly. So engaging that I will forgive the faults.
Right. Yeah. To me, it feels like controlled chaos, which I mentioned to you before. It's like there's a lot of stuff going on in this movie, and it could have been a completely incoherent mess. Then the fact that it really isn't is a testament to the creators of the film, because, man, it would be, it is a tough job to bring even like just the core Avengers together was, I'm sure, a tough job, but to bring together all of the Avengers and all of the Guardians of the Galaxy and pretty much like everybody who's been a major role in the previous films, I can see why they would be hesitant to even like bother to bring the TV universe along for the ride to the TV characters. As much as I would have loved to see even like just an on-screen cameo of like not even have them say anything necessarily, just to have them fighting it in the streets or something would have been cool. But at the same time, I kind of understand why they didn't want to even bother with that, because
there was no room,
it's a packed movie as it is, and if you're going to start to even give a second's focus to characters that sadly most of the film watchers probably haven't even been introduced to, because sadly the shows do not garner quite the same audience as the movies, then Yeah. So,
one last point on my end. I was really happy that the generic CG army that seems prerequisite for all these films now was done in a way that was different and interesting. I don't know what those multi-armed screeching nightmares were, but they were definitely not the Chitauri. They were terrifying. They were vicious. And they were visually interesting enough that it didn't feel quite like the same old, same old. And the fact that we got to see the Chitauri invasion force during the Gamora flashback was a nice juxtaposition between the two. And having the children of Thanos be the standout big fights amongst it didn't feel like we were drowning in CG nonsense. It was, okay, these are the things running around. Holy crap, they're terrifying. Okay, we're done with them. It wasn't, you know, the slog of here's the heroes fighting all the gray, goobly things over and over and over. It was enough to give you the sense of impending, oh God. But then they dealt with it.
Right. I think they're called Outriders.
Sure, why not?
Which I guess is a comic thing. I don't know. Maybe, it just reminds me of, Outrun and Super Hang On. It's a Super Hang On and Outrun. that's what the crossover game would be called, Outriders.
I'd
play it. Of course I'd play it. It's an Outrun and Super Hang On game. So all in all, Ian, what do you think?
Oh, loved it. It was everything I wanted it to be. Can't wait to buy it on DVD, Blu-ray, HD, whatever, and just watch it religiously and pick it apart. And I'm be gonna, happy and sad all over again.
I'm going to get it on Betamax. You can't stop me.
Get it on Beta Ray.
I'm glad I could set that joke up for you. You knocked it down perfectly.
Thank you. Thank you.
Have we just about wrapped up our discussion here?
We have. Let's move on to the Patreon ad.
All right. And since we've wrapped up our discussion on Avengers Infinity War, let's get into a Patreon ad from our lovely patron, Daniel H. He says, "We all know and love Jennifer Hernandez, a.k.a. Chibi Jenhen. And we all know how hard it is to be a freelance artist. But there is something we can do to help out a world-class talent. Buy her some coffee. Or Ko-fi. Or Ko-fi. Let's just do all three pronunciations. For a simple $3, you can help keep a starving artist from actually starving. So let's roust some Sonic brother and sisterhood. Thanks for your time. You can find more at ko-fi.com/chibigenhen. Link will be down in the description and all that good stuff. So it'll be there. Don't worry. So go help out Jennifer. She deserves it. Are we ready to get into the Q&A?
We are ready for the Q&A.
All right. Now, you can ask your questions via email using the email bumblecast@yahoo.com, on Twitter @bumblecast, or using the hashtag bumblecast, down in the YouTube comments of any of our videos, or via Patreon in the comments or as a private message. First question comes from Andrew D. I read the interview with Game Informer where you confirmed that Sonic Forces is canon to the new comic. Did it happen exactly the same as the game events, or differently? Also, are the tie-in comics canon to the new comic as well?
Sort of, kind of, yes. I know that there's been some confusion over this, so but it never hurts to restate it for the record. The comics are inspired by the game canon. They are not canon to the games. They are not continuations of the games. They're just influenced by them. The games are the basis of which they're written. So you can assume that most of the game events have happened to one, but the comic may treat them a little differently depending on various circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the case of Sonic Forces, you can't really say specifically who the Avatar character was, male, female, species, Wispon used, all that jazz, because the player gets to choose that. And whatever the player plays in the game, that's that canon for that version of the game, which makes it really confusing. So suffice to say, there was a particular soldier who helped turn the tide of the war. Sure. In a broad stroke, that happened. Now, the online exclusive comics, those were plotted by Sega and commissioned by Sega. So those are canon to the game. And thus, being game canon, I could reference those as inspirational influences for the IDW comic. But I'm not going to be... The way that we are approaching the comic is, I'm not really, right now at least, I'm not going to be going back and citing, you know, these specific instances. You know, so the reason why we use Sonic Forces as we have is the basis, it's the latest Sonic game. That's what the largest audience is going to be most familiar with in terms of modern Sonic. So, you know, folks coming in, they should have a pretty good idea of what's going on if they play the games. If not, it's okay. You still have the general premise, and we move on from there.
Yeah. All right. That makes sense to me. Next one comes from Trent H. Mr. Flynn, on your portfolio, you have ARMS listed as a graphic novel trade series. Without violating any potential NDA, is there any way to clarify if this means multiple graphic novels will be released based on the game? And also, will the tale be focused on Springman's journey to the top of the league exclusively, or will other characters have moments in the spotlight as well, beyond appearing as opponents?
I'm not quite sure how much I can talk about yet, since Dark Horse hasn't put out a ton of official info on it yet. I will say that the graphic novels are all part of one storyline. So it's not like different takes on it. It's, one follows another.
Sure.
Springman will be the central character to the storyline, but I am trying to spend as much time with the other characters and their world as space allows.
Okay.
I should probably stop there before I get myself in trouble.
Okay. Next question comes from Trouble the Cat. I wanted to ask if Bean and Bark would be good guys this time in the IDW comic, like they actually were in Sonic the Fighters.
I here's the thing about Sonic the Fighters, they didn't really have any characterization at all.
No.
Now, there's some like really obscure stuff that just recently came to light, but I mean, the story of Sonic the Fighters is each character is a guardian of one of the eight Chaos Emeralds. So you can't really cite that as the hardest of canons to begin with.
Yeah.
And here's a fun fact that I just recently learned from the lead scenario writer for Sonic Heroes, is that Knack, Bean, and Bark were considered a possible team for Sonic Heroes.
Really?
Yeah, apparently they were just throwing a bunch of ideas out there, and some of the early configurations, Knack, Bean, and Bark. And given that Knack has always been a villainous character, I would assume that would have been the first incarnation of Team Hooligan had it come to be.
Yeah.
Now, that's taken with a grain of salt because apparently the other team configurations considered were Metal Sonic, Mighty, and Ray,
Okay.
Cream, Amy, and Rouge, which I guess would put Rouge as the power type.
Maybe, I
And
suppose.
Chaos, Gamma, and Big.
Why not? I'd play that.
Now, this apparently was so early on in development that it was before Shadow was even decided to resurrect him or not.
Right.
So, who knows how much that would have influenced anything at any point, but the fact that they were even considered to be resurrected. And in that particular configuration, tells me that we were all thinking kind of along the same lines.
Yeah.
And then the way that they were cameoed in Sonic Generations, which were directly influenced by the comics, from my understanding, their cameo-esque appearance in Sonic Mania, if you wanted to say that they were, if not villain, not heroic, but like general characters and fighters, I can understand that, but they were never really established good guys.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, in fact, they weren't really established as bad guys either, so I don't know. They're the hooligans now. And how it is.
All right. And next question comes from Zarek Studios. Back in Archie Sonic 212, Espio went around the fire and gave his dirt on each member of the Chaotix. In one of your old Ask Ians, you said in the original draft for the issue, Espio had dirt on all the Chaotix except Ray, because he was missing from continuity for 10 years. What dirt did he have on Julie, Sue, and Saffron? It's been bugging me for a long time.
Man, do you remember the continuity knot that was? Jeez. Thinking back, I think the only thing he had on that she was ex-Legionnaire and that was worth paying attention to, but she had since proven herself, so there wasn't anything else to follow. Saffron? Honest to goodness, I don't remember. It may have been kind of a, it may have been that she was like the one genuinely clean person in all the Chaotix. But if there was a greater plan to that, I forgot. I'll have to dig through my old notes when I finally get around to finalizing Lost Hedgehog Tales.
All right, and next one comes from Mystery Cup of Joe. In the Archie Sonic comics, when Sally was a robot, Antoine losing his face in the explosion with metal and other catastrophes, was the Genesis Wave the actual answer to solving those problems, or was there another solution that you guys wanted?
No. Those were all plot points that I was planning on addressing. They were all going to lead towards Sonic number 200 and beyond that. And I'll be getting into that when I can finally get Lost Hedgehog Tales out there. No, Genesis Wave was because of legal stuff where I had to drop all those plot points and create a new continuity. And that was the Genesis Wave was my way of creating a fresh start. And it also conveniently worked into the Sonic Mega Man crossover. But no, all those things that were going on at the time, they had planned endings. I had ideas for those. Didn't get the opportunity to finish them.
And our last question comes from good old Sinfritz. So, Ian, what is Tangle's favorite food? Is it graham crackers? And does she like to move it?
Her favorite fruit is strawberries.
Oh, I like graham crackers.
And, graham crackers are all right. I can take them or leave them.
I like them covered in cinnamon. Those are pretty good.
And she likes to try to dance. I mean, she's got the energy for it. She's got gumption, but she's got no rhythm. Absolutely none. I mean, sure, she can fight with the best of them. She's in her element when she's throwing down, but she can't dance. Oh, she can't dance. It's so sad.
What a shame. And with that, we have reached the end of the Q&A and the end of another episode of the Bumblecast.
Before we wrap up, I'm going to give a slow and scratchy shout out to all the patrons who make this show possible. I'm doing this for you.
You're doing it. Okay.
You do so much for us.
I was wondering if I was going to be the one who was doing it.
No.
Ian showing his true dedication to you.
Because of their dedication to us.
Yes.
Big thank you to Daniel H., Eric F., Alex P., Xanos, Brando, Fotoler, Scruffy Matt, Chris A., John B., Sam Cybercat, Mike B., Samuel P., Jennifer R., David C., Revan the Light, Lisa M., A.E. Double, Brody M., Christopher W., Neil H., Damo, Saturn Flicky, Justin S., Justin G., Connell T., Mike D., Adam T., Silly String, Takaro, Michael AQ, Artindy M., Lee HK, Chevelle, Don B., Sin Fritz, Taco Elgato Comics, John M., S. Yavarovich 9X, James Key, James K., Dick Tick, Papadripopoulos, Overthinking Films, Adam BT, and Ron.
And with that, we have reached the end for now.
Are you lowering your voice to imitate me?
No, I couldn't possibly do that. I don't have a low voice anyway, so. All right. Well, Ian, where can the people find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter at IanFlynnBKC, or everything about me, my work, my schedule, my con appearances over at BumbleKing.com.
You can find me on Twitter at KyleJCRB, and you can also head on over to KNGI.org, where you can listen to Nitro Game Injection, my video game music remix streaming show that streams live Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, along with many other awesome shows that you can download and listen to there, including episodes of the Bumblecast. So if you want to get your stream on and download some MP3s of the Bumblecast, there you go.
If you want to keep up with updates on the show or contact us, head over to Twitter at Bumblecast or via Bumblecast@yahoo.com.
Don't forget, you can also check out our Twitch channel, which we really need to get into using a little bit more, at twitch.tv/BumblecastGaming.
You get Patreon exclusive Bumblecast gaming live streaming, Kyle, every Friday in the evening.
Yes, most Fridays we try. We do our best.
I was sick this Friday. Sorry.
Yeah. And finally, go check out the Bumble store, yo. Get you some cool Bumble threads at shop.spreadshirt.com/bumblestore.
That's going to wrap us up for Bumblecast episode 67. Get out there, watch some Infinity War weeks for episode 68.
See you then, folks. Thanos. Hey. Return.
And give me 1 second. I need to blow my nose.
All right.
And I don't want to record that.
Why not?
Yeah. Hi there, and thanks for listening to the Bumblecast. If you liked our show, be sure to hit the subscribe button and consider supporting us on Patreon. We have some great rewards as well as big plans on how to make the show even better. Also, rate and review our show on iTunes. It gets more folks listening and helps us out, so we definitely appreciate it. Original music composed by Ken Coda Snyder, used with permission. Find more of his music at bc.s3m.us and find the theme song at noisechanradio.bandcamp.com, available as a pay-what-you-want download. Her favorite fruit is strawberries.
That's it?
Yeah, what's wrong with strawberries, right?
Okay. I'm just wondering, why are you not addressing the rest of the question?
I was waiting for further commentary on your end.
Oh, okay. Strawberries but, are fine. I don't like strawberries, but that's fine if she likes them. Go ahead.